Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast is number 800. Holy crap. The topic is nutrition and the title is Advice When Starting a New Diet. So if you've been with me from podcast number 1 all the way to podcast 800, what have you been doing with your life? But thank you for joining us. So thank you for listening, for those who have ever listened at all. But if you've listened for a long time, I hope this has been a helpful podcast into your life. It's been helpful for me to do it. It's just kind of fun to share my ideas and thoughts. And it's been fun to kind of discuss with the listeners when everybody sends in emails and kind of reaches out on social media. It feels really good and it's really nice to hear back from everybody. So thank you to those who do. As usual, I'll cut through all the kind of bullcrap stuff and let's get right into it. So Meredith and I were watching a show about 500 pound like sisters, these women who are 500 plus pounds and their journey of kind of losing weight. And we both like the psychology of it in the sense of seeing the emotions behind it, the mental aspects behind it. And then I also enjoy just seeing what they're doing in terms of nutrition and physical activity to help themselves lose weight. So just kind of fun. It's something we listen to in the background while we do work at our home office, which is really nice. And one scene in particular came to mind and kind of sparked the idea of this podcast was the two sisters met with a dietitian. Now, I have a master's in human nutrition. I went through the program you would do to become a registered dietitian, but I did not do the 9-month internship, which is at the very end. So I was recommended by two of my professors to not do that due to the financial cost of doing 9 months of school stuff, like taking all the credits and all that stuff, and the extra cost that would be, considering that I didn't want to use my, I wouldn't have wanted to use my dietitian certification in the standard way. I didn't want to work at a hospital. I didn't want to work at public schools. And the advice that I liked to give didn't fit government recommendations. So I actually had two of my professors as clients before I graduated school. And the reason why was in school, for the Masters of Human Nutrition and kind of the registered dietitian aspect, they teach you what would be considered general health nutrition, how to eat to make your blood work look healthy. Well, what they didn't teach was anything at all. There was zero classes, zero information about aesthetic nutrition, how to eat to look a certain way. And there was only one 3-credit class out of the entire program on performance nutrition, and it was more aerobic-based than anaerobic, like lifting weights. So I was pretty disappointed in the program overall, and then that's what it entailed. It didn't have any of the aesthetics. It didn't have any of the kind of sport performance, which is what I was mostly interested in. And it's what I already knew. It's what I loved. And I started personal training when I was 18, like for money. People started paying me when I was 18 years old to do personal training. So by the time I was in grad school, I'd already been doing it for, 6 years or so. And I'd already worked with a lot of like hundreds of clients and had really good knowledge. Had read a lot of books and things. So I knew a lot about aesthetic nutrition and performance nutrition, but I knew that there was always more to know. So even 20 years into it, I'm still learning new things all the time, and it excites me and it makes it fun. But at that time, I thought I would go to grad school for that degree and learn even more in school about aesthetic and performance nutrition, but did not. So bummer, bummer. But the two professors I had as clients, amongst a couple other professors, recommended that I not do the certification because the advice that I could then give would be limited legally. So I had to give advice according to kind of the government recommendations, or I would be at risk for being sued. And I didn't agree with the government recommendations in the aspect of how it related to aesthetic nutrition and performance nutrition. It was more so, like we said, based on how to have good blood work. But there are people who can have great blood work, but they don't have six-pack abs. There are people who have great blood work, but they're horrible in terms of how they eat to improve their performance. So there's a lot of aspects of aesthetic and performance nutrition that are not covered in government recommendations. Therefore, my advice would not be kind of supported in any legal way. So I took their advice, and it turned out really well. I kept teaching at the university. I taught at the university for 7 years teaching like weight training and exercise physiology classes, and I started Brutal Iron Gym in right after school, and that's been going pretty well so far. It's been 10 years, and I've been doing this job now for tomorrow will be my birthday, so it'll be 19 years of being a personal trainer, over 2,000 clients at over 500 students when I taught at the university. So I have tons and tons and tons of experience. I really love this stuff, and I enjoy it. Now, with all that said, the reason why I mentioned all of that was the dietitian in the TV show, the advice that they gave was horrible, but I don't want to come across as I'm bashing all dietitians. This one specifically had the two pieces of advice that we're going to discuss today, and I'm going to discuss why I believe them to be not necessarily wrong, just not as right as other types of advice could be. So I just want to get across that I have gone to school for this, and I know a lot of dietitians who are very smart, great people, and I wouldn't want to come across as kind of talking trash on all of them in general. I more so want to come across as what was the information that we can learn from today's podcast, not that I'm just trying to attack dietitians. Okay, so one of the questions that the dietitian asked the sisters was, how many sodas do you drink a day? And the answer was 12. They drink 12, and I believe it would be cans of soda. I hope to God it's not bigger than that. But I think it was 12 cans of soda a day. And that is a lot, for sure. The advice from the dietitian was to reduce it to one a day. I'm pausing because I'm waiting for your reaction, which was probably exactly what the sister's reaction was, which was, oh, hell no. And how in the hell am I supposed to do that? So that was a very significant reduction. If you take away the mental and the emotional aspects of food, is reducing sodas from 12 a day to 1 a day helpful? Yes, of course. It helps to reduce calories. It reduces sugar intake. Helps a lot of things related to blood sugar control, diabetic issues, a whole bunch of things that is really helpful for. But let's now add back in the mental and emotional aspects. That is extremely, extremely restrictive. And it is an extremely large rate of change. To go from drinking 12 sodas a day to one. As I mentioned to Meredith, kind of in a side conversation, I said, what's the point of even having one? Why not? Why? If you're going to go from 12 to that low of a number, you might as well have went to zero. What's the point? That one is not going to be a saving grace that makes those sisters feel like, oh, okay, we had to reduce our soda, but at least we get one a day. Bullshit, there's no way. One soda is not going to substitute 12. So one of the things I was thinking about whenever I heard the advice and kind of continued to think through it was, what you're asking them to do is the 12 times that they would normally grab a soda throughout the day. As a dietitian or as someone trying to lose weight, we could do this to ourselves. So if you drink 12 sodas a day, if you drink 10, if you drink 8, if you drink 6, however many you drink, if you think that's a number that on a new diet approach you would like to reduce, so that way you can get a little bit healthier kind of control over your sugar intake. Well, this advice would be the same for you. Is however many times a day that you would normally drink a soda, you think, I want a soda, and your brain says, yes, okay. Well, for us to make a reduction, we have to now say no sometimes. So that dietitian was asking those sisters to say no 11 times a day compared to one yes. Somehow, the sisters who did not have great willpower towards food, hence how they're 500 plus pounds, were supposed to magically be able to say no 11 out of 12 times when it came to something sugary and sweet, something that they felt an emotional and mental connection with, something that they felt made them happy. They were supposed to say no 11 out of 12 times? No way. Not going to happen. So that advice, in my opinion, is absolutely not correct. In the sense that if you consider the emotional and mental aspect, it's unreasonable to expect somebody who is struggling to make any kind of willpower change over food to all of a sudden be able to say no 11 out of 12 times. Not going to happen. So the advice that we would have would be to reduce the number of times you have to say no, to a more kind of manageable number, but there still has to be some no's. So there still has to be some change in order for us to make progress. But all the change doesn't need to happen in one time, and all the change doesn't need to happen right now. So for example, if they were having 12 a day, maybe they could spend 2 weeks having 10 a day, 2 weeks having 8 a day, 2 weeks having 6 a day, 2 weeks having 4 a day. So you can kind of stretch that out to where if they get better at saying no, say 2 out of 12 times, they can get comfortable with that. They can probably say no, you know, once in the morning, knowing that an hour or two later they can have one if they want it. They can say once, they can say no once in the afternoon if they know an hour or two later they can have it. It's much easier for us to make changes in small steps. It doesn't feel as significant, so therefore sometimes we don't feel as motivated to do small things. But small things add up to big changes, and small things can often add up to permanent changes. As we make the change, as we get a degree of uncomfortable, we can adapt to it to where it becomes a new norm. Then we take another small step into uncomfortable, we adapt to it, and it becomes a new norm. We can adapt to a degree of uncomfortable. The smaller a time, we can do it more often and more continuous and maintain it. If we try to make huge changes to our regular habits and our regular lifestyle, you can do it temporarily. You can do it short term. But typically, whatever the motivation was, whatever the reason was, when it's gone, all those habits will come right back. This is why typically diets that have significant changes in behavior don't last. So if we think of a ketogenic diet, somebody just says no to all carbohydrates. Oh, that's a horrible idea. Horrible. Because you're going to want to eat some of the foods that are considered carbohydrates at some point in time in the entire rest of your life. So to say no to all of them and think that you're going to maintain that forever is like that's irrational. That's not logical. Instead, it's better for us to kind of reduce or control or put some other type of management around our carbohydrate intake. Maybe we only have it on the meals before we're super active or work out. You know, maybe we only have it, like midday meal, like at lunch, but we don't have it at the end of the day, right before bed. So we can manage kind of big changes in our life by taking them at smaller steps and letting us adapt to them over time. So that's the first kind of thing I want to think through here, is it's easier to say no some of the time than it is all of the time. And you can build on that some of the time over time. Okay. So let's look at this second piece of advice. Was the dietitian told them to stay away from starchy carbohydrates. Starchy carbohydrates, just a quick list, would be potatoes, bread, pasta, and rice. These women are not 500 plus pounds because of potatoes, breads, pasta, and rice. They're 500 pounds because of sugars and fried foods. So I found it kind of odd that the dietitian would choose to focus on starchy carbs. Whenever fats contribute most calories to our diet, so there's 9 calories per gram of fat versus 4 calories per gram of protein and carbohydrates. So fat actually contains the most calories per volume of food. Therefore, the greatest reduction of calories we can have with the smallest reduction of volume would be to reduce fats. That means that they don't have to eat drastically less. They can eat somewhat less and still lose drastic calories. So that's a much better change for us, is to focus on fats rather than carbohydrates, in the sense that what's going to help them lose weight, which is more important than what they eat, is how much they eat. So we talked about in podcast way back when, in podcast number 41, titled Diet Right, What Matters Most, is the most impactful aspect to our diet, whether we're dieting to lose fat, whether we're dieting to build muscle, whether we're dieting to improve sport performance, whether we're dieting for any reason whatsoever, the most impactful aspect is calories. Calories determine kind of the direction of the diet. They determine the direction of our body. So if I have a deficit of calories, my body will lose weight. Doesn't matter what the calories are. So I can eat ice cream and pizza all day, but if I eat half the calories I normally do, then I'll lose weight. Whereas if I eat a surplus of calories, I will gain weight. Doesn't matter how quote-unquote healthy the food is. It can be organic everything. But if you overeat your calories, if you eat in excess, you will gain weight. So calories is the most impactful. Are there other impactful things? Absolutely. Meal timing, quantity of your macronutrients, meaning like the comparison of protein versus carbs and fats, and the quality of your macronutrients. All those things matter. But none of them matter if the calories are not controlled first. So that is what the dietitian should have focused on. Number one was reducing calories. We knew that the reduction of soda would help reduce calories, sure. It was just too large of a reduction. And then she was looking for other places to reduce calories, and she chose starchy carbs. No clue why. Horrible idea. Starchy carbs also have a good amount of fiber in them, and they make you feel fuller longer than, say, sugar-based carbohydrates. So the focus should have been on reducing fats, and especially like unhealthy ones like fried fats, trans fats, saturated fats. If the sisters ate any unsaturated fats at all, I'd be surprised, but they should probably keep some of those in their diet for health. But they should also reduce sugars. So sugars cause cravings. Sugars are often digested very quickly, cause a large blood spike, which can then kind of lead to cravings later in the day. It can make us feel like we're still hungry. There's a lot of kind of negative emotional mental aspects to having high amounts of sugar, and especially like multiple peaks of sugar intake throughout the day. So by focusing on fats, they could reduce more calories with the less amount of volume reduction. So they won't feel like they had to eat a lot less, but they would get a lot less calories. And they should have focused on reduction of sugars, because there was many other ways in which they were consuming sugar than just soda alone. That should have been the focus, way more importantly than starchy carbs. So two lessons that I kind of wanted to apply from that episode was to, we talked about in the first aspect of sodas, is make the degree of change that you want to kind of implement, make it in small steps. So there was a book I read by Jordan Peterson titled The 12 Laws to Live By, or The 12 Laws of Life. So that's a great book. If you look up Jordan Peterson 12, so just Google that and you'll see the book. It's a great book. And one of the rules he had was to aim low. And what he means by that is when you want to make a change, don't try to change in big, large, crazy ways. Try to aim low when you make changes. This is going to be a little bit of an exaggeration, but it'll get the point across, is if you aim to make a small behavioral change that you feel is almost beneath you, it's so stupid, it's so small, and like it's just so easy to do, and you're like, what's the point of even doing that? It at least gets it started. It at least gets the habit. So I'm going to use an extremely goofy exaggeration of point, but I want to get the point across quickly, is they talk about, you'll commonly hear people say, like, when you want to change positive behaviors is to make your bed in the morning. Because if you make your bed in the morning, that's a form of kind of organization. That's a form of doing something positive for yourself, productive for yourself. It's a form of just a habit that can be built upon. So, for example, if I make my bed every day, I can then, you know, build up to making my bed and brushing my teeth. I can build up to making my bed, brushing my teeth, and maybe drinking a half a liter of water. And that helps us feel more hydrated. And all of a sudden, we can eat better breakfast. We have more energy throughout the day. So it kind of builds and builds and builds. So his point was, is just make one corner of the bed. Just tuck one corner of the sheets into your bed. Now, when you hear that, you'd say, that's stupid. Why would I not do that? Why don't I make the whole bed? Well, do you make your whole bed now? You know you can make your whole bed. But do you even do that? No. So if you just do one corner, you're going to do it a couple days and realize, this is pretty stupid. I just might as well do the other corner. So all of a sudden, you're doing two corners. You realize, well, that's pretty stupid. That's pretty easy. I'm going to go to three corners. Then all of a sudden, before you find it, you've made 10, 12 changes. They're all very consistent because you've done them in small steps every single day. And then you can see that a large rate of change has helped and has happened just from having these small little steps. So the other thing I would emphasize is if you read 10 books on behavioral change, all 10 will tell you to take small steps. So what that means is people who are experts in change every single one of them tell you to take small steps. That's probably a pretty damn good idea. If every single person who has been successful at what you want to be successful at says the same damn thing, do it. Okay? The second point I want to get across is when we want to make a change to our nutritional habits, think of changing calories first, because that's going to be the most impactful in what direction your diet's going to go. So I actually struggled with this when I was trying to gain weight. So I graduated high school at about 165 pounds, kind of chubby fat. You could grab like a roll of fat on my belly at 165 pounds, which is pretty sad. So I had very little muscle mass, kind of skinny fat dude. I have since gained over 100 pounds and I'm actually leaner. So I've made enormous weight changes. But one of the restrictions I had, one of the challenges I had when I first started trying to eat more to grow more, was I believed myself to have to fit into weight loss style rules. So I knew the rules that it took to lose weight, such as avoid sugars. You know, try not to have too many sauces on your food because that can be hidden calories. You know, like don't drink your calories. That's another thing as well. So I had all these kind of things in my mind, these rules in my mind on how to lose weight. So I was trying to quote unquote eat more, but doing it in all these kind of controlled ways that I was actually restricting myself from just getting calories in. So I was trying to grow with getting muscle, but zero fat whatsoever, to the point where I was actually restricting all growth. I would grow a little bit, but then worry about getting fat, and then I'd kind of clean that up, and then all of a sudden be right back at the weight I was. So people who try to put on 5, 10, 15 pounds, and then all of a sudden they find themselves 2 or 3 months later back to exactly where they were, this is often a problem they run into, is instead of focusing on calories, they focus on the what of what they eat. So rather than focusing on how much they're eating, they focus on what they're eating. They're too restrictive in the what that they never actually significantly change the how much. So if you're wanting to change in diets, calories is your most important thing. So if it helps you to gain weight, get more calories in by adding sauces, go ahead and do so. If it helps you to drink calories, go ahead and do so. One of the first things I ever did when I tried to gain weight was I set the goal of drinking a gallon of milk a day. And I did it for 2 years. That is insane. I actually did not miss a single day in 2 years of trying to drink a gallon of milk a day. I gained a lot of weight. Unfortunately, at that time, it was too much sugar compared to my body weight. So it kind of made me chubby, but I gained a lot of weight. And then I, over time, molded that weight into a leaner physique. I then gained more weight, molded that weight into a leaner physique, but I actually moved the scale. If you are wanting to gain muscle, if you're wanting to gain size, you have to move the scale. You can't be afraid of gaining fat. Now, I'm not saying go home and eat a Domino's pizza every night. Do it in, you know, a smart way, but actually move the scale. Let your body weight go up by breaking some of the rules of a fat loss diet. So have sauces, drink your calories, you know, eat a little extra before you go to bed, even wake up in the middle of the night and eat. I used to do that. I remember one time I was trying to gain a lot of weight while I was in my early stages of grad school. So I skipped all the classes that weren't attendance based and I slept all the time because I knew I grew when I slept, and I would wake up to eat a steak and drink orange juice. That is weird, but the orange juice kind of got my blood sugar up, and it helped my body kind of break down and start to process the proteins and the fats of the steak faster. So it was a weird combination, and I probably wouldn't want to do that right now because it sounds gross, but it helped me. I think I gained like 30 pounds in like 3 months, and then I kind of got to keep that weight and clean it up over time. If you're wanting to lose weight, the same kind of rules apply, but now towards a deficit. If you want to change your weight, you do have to change your calories. Most often, when people think of going on a diet, they think of changing what they eat, not of how much they eat. So they'll switch from white bread to wheat bread, from white rice to brown rice. They'll eat organic food or no sugar added. I remember a client told me that they weren't having any sugar in their diet, and then they sent me a diet that included applesauce. And I'm like, how the hell are you eating applesauce if it doesn't have a sugar? It's like, those aren't apples. So we looked at the label and it just said no sugar added. There were still 20 some grams of sugar in a serving. They just didn't add sugar to the applesauce to make it sweeter. So what we have to do is pay attention to how much we're eating, because we can get lost in trying to eat quote-unquote healthy foods but not actually make a caloric reduction. This happens all the time because initially people try to, they just kind of subconsciously eat less and they eat a little cleaner. They all of a sudden kind of feel hungry, so they start eating more of the clean food. They eat more of the clean food. Then they're like, hey, you know what? I actually don't feel hungry anymore. That's because you're eating the normal calories you were normally eating. You're now just eating it in quote-unquote clean foods. But without a caloric reduction, you're not going to get a weight change. You might get a health change. It'll be healthier for you not to eat so many sugars and saturated fats and things like that. But you're not going to get a weight change. You're not going to lose the fat that you want to lose. So calories is going to be the most important thing to look at. So that dietitian who looked at starchy carbs because they're quote-unquote supposed to be, you know, harmful towards fat loss and they make you gain weight, bullshit. It's just how much of the things you eat that make you gain weight. So those are the two tips we have from that episode. And these are just things I think are just really two easy pieces of advice in regards to kind of easy to understand. Maybe not easy to implement, but easy to understand and gets you started. So when you make changes, make them in stages. Don't try to make them all right away. And when you're thinking about changing your diet, make sure you change calories first. Worry about the how much you're eating before you worry about the what you're eating. If you want any help in that stuff, so check out podcast 41. It talks about the different components of diets and what matters most when you're dieting. If you can't find the direct link for podcast 41 because it's so many ago, just email us at brutalirongym@gmail.com and I'll send you the direct link. But that's a really good podcast to look at. And I think that book of Jordan Peterson, The 12 Laws of Life or The 12 Rules to Live By, that's going to be a good book as well because it also just talks about lifestyle change, habit change for all of life in general. So really cool information. If you want any help from us, if you want any clarity on any information, if you have an idea of what you want to do but you're not sure if it's right, or if you want to run the idea across somebody, you can always email us. Our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us on our website, which is www.brutalirongym.com. Cool. Now, we are also offering free consultations if you'd like to do a consultation and turn it into a podcast so everybody else can learn. We can do that anonymous. You don't have to tell everything in your life story. But you would call in. We do a Zoom call or phone call. We do a consultation. We record it, and we make it into a podcast. Let other people learn from your story. So it's free for you, and it helps other people. That's a pretty good outcome. So if you'd like to participate in that, just shoot us an email at brutalirongym@gmail.com. Great. Okay, I think that's everything. So if you like the podcast and if you think the podcast is helpful, please share it. You can share it on social media. You can share it in a conversation, text message, email, however. But if you love anyone in your life and you want them to have good information, make positive changes in their life, please share the podcast if you think it can help. Also, if you like this information, you can find more from us on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter under the name Brutal Iron Gym. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd always, always, always love to hear from you. The podcast is for you, so we want to know what you want to learn about. You can tell us at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.